baseball and postseason fantasy baseball. What up, everybody? Welcome to the show. I guess it's really off-season fantasy baseball. This is FBT. You loyal listeners sticking around during the off-season, I love it. I'm Adam Azar, and here's Chris Towers. Chris, my beard almost as thick as yours.
I don't think that's true.
Look at it.
I'm cultivating, and I think this is like the longest my beard has been in years. I haven't trimmed it in like 2 months.
Really?
So okay. I'm kind of going wild.
I guess you win.
Yeah, I'm not on camera.
You win,
anymore,
Chris.
I can just look whatever I look however I want.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I'll take my L, I guess. We're going to as teams get eliminated from the postseason, we will recap their seasons and give you one player who will be better next year and one player who will be worse next year. So we have Boston and Arizona, and I guess we could have done Colorado too, and Minnesota, but I don't care about them. They're old news. They're last week's news. John Farrell got fired, and we'll talk about that. But you know what? Let's talk a little bit about a guy who's pitching in like 2 hours. We're recording this at 2 o'clock Eastern. Steven Strasburg, at least right now, he's supposed to be pitching. It's been a bit of a saga. And by the time you all hear this, you'll know, because game four
will
be
done. I have to confess.
Uh-huh.
Nothing about this makes any sense to me. Like, what? I don't understand anyone's motivations. I don't understand Steven Strasburg, like, hinting at not pitching. I don't understand Dusty Baker, like, making weird comments yesterday, lying about when he threw his bullpen session.
He lied or he was just mistaken?
Whatever. I don't know. He said he threw a bullpen session yesterday, and that's why he could, like... It was just, I don't understand why the media is freaking out and like trying to like hang Steven Strasburg for that. Like, nothing about this makes any sense. And the fact that Steven Strasburg's going to end up pitching anyway, just like, it's like the worst controversy ever.
Well, it's done now. And the thing is, like, if you can have Strasburg pitch on regular rest, he has to pitch. So he's healthy, he's pitching. But what a second half for Steven Strasburg. Strasburg went 6-1 with an 8.86 ERA in the second half. Opponents hit 171 against him. Now, compare that to two seasons ago, 2015. Is that like three seasons ago? I mean, I guess not really.
Two seasons ago.
Jake Arrieta. So Strasburg is 0.86 in the second half. Arrieta is 12-1 compared to 6-1. 0.75 ERA. And 113 strikeouts and 107 and a 30. He threw about 50 more innings, 45 more innings than Strasburg. But very similar ERAs. Opponents hit 148 off of Arrieta in that second half. Opponents hit 171 off Strasburg. Amazing second half surge for the Strass man. And I asked you off air, I'll ask you now on the air, because people care. Who would you take next year, Jake Arrieta or Steven Strasburg?
You know, Jake Arrieta had a really good second half himself.
You sure did.
Sub-3 ERA, but I think the answer has to be Steven Strasburg.
Don't sell him short. It was last 14 starts, it was a 2.26 ERA for Arrieta.
And his strikeout rate went back up, but the thing I look at with Arrieta is even when he was at his best, he was a pretty inefficient pitcher. Like, he needed to be the best pitcher in baseball to get to like 220 innings. But you know, now that he's not at his best, and I think we can say fairly easily that he's probably more of like a mid-threes ERA, the chances of him pitching 200 innings in a season are extremely low. And I know the same thing can be said for Steven Strasburg, who has done it one time in his career. But with Strasburg, it's about staying healthy. If Strasburg stays healthy, you know, you might get the number one pitcher in fantasy. I don't think that happens with Jake Arrieta.
Mid-threes? Mid-threes for Arrieta? That seems harsh.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't think it's harsh. I think he's a diminished pitcher. I think that's still very good.
Well,
but I think he's probably a mid-3 ERA pitcher with like 180, 190 innings.
Hmm.
And it's a little hard to get excited about that kind of pitcher, especially given the ups and downs we've seen.
All right. So the news and notes for you today. The Red Sox are moving on from John Farrell. And I kept meaning to look this up, but I kept forgetting. So let me look it up now. I'm going to say the, what's their name? The Red Sox? That's who he managed.
Yeah.
I'm going to say they led the American League in steals. I'm just going to say that. Do we know
they
that?
They had a couple of 20 homer steal guys, right?
Oh boy, I was off. Not by much though. The Angels led the American League in steals, followed by
everybody was running there.
Followed by the Rangers and then the Red Sox. Third in the American League, they were sixth in baseball with 106 steals.
I guess you worry that they'll run a little less, but this is also a team built around a young, dynamic, athletic core with Xander Bogaerts, Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi. So I think you expect those guys to keep running. Benintendi probably has maybe 20 steal upside, but I wouldn't expect a managerial change to change much about them.
Okay. And now the other thing is they didn't hit for a lot of power. If they hit more home runs, they're going to steal fewer bases.
They need some bops for sure. They need to go out and get someone who's going to hit some homers. I don't think you can count on Hanley Ramirez bouncing back or Mookie Betts to be a 35 homer guy. This is a team that probably needs to trade for Giancarlo Stanton.
And Miguel Sano, he's missed so much time with the shin injury. He may need surgery on that shin. You know, I always find it so interesting how it's just like, oh, guy needs surgery, whatever. It's just a shin. It's no big deal. I don't want to have surgery. I don't have any surgery. I don't even want to get my wisdom teeth. I still have my wisdom teeth.
I do too. Mine came in mostly okay. But, you know, you see this every once in a while in sports. I remember a couple years ago, there were a lot of reports about Carmelo Anthony's knee and how he needed to have, like, he had like bursitis or one of those things where, you know, he had a lot of swelling on the knee and it was the playoffs. And they were like, he needs to get the knee drained. But he was really like kind of not looking forward to having that done and tried to postpone it as much because they have to take a big ass needle and stick in your knee. I'm sorry if you have to bleep that. But like
I'm gonna keep it.
That's kind of my take is like we treat this stuff so we have such a cavalier attitude about this
right,
and we
yeah.
talk like people call Rob Gronkowski soft and it's like no, this stuff sucks. Like Rob Gronkowski has like broken his back.
Yeah.
Like man, having surgery on your shin probably stinks. You probably have to not move for like a month.
Getting your knee drained, is that painful? That one seems like it's nothing to me.
I don't want a big needle stuck in my knee to pull liquid out of it. Like nothing about that sounds like fun.
I feel like it would feel really good to get that liquid out. I'll have my knee drained right now. I don't even need it. Like I'm in.
It could. I mean, there's a chance it could be satisfying. Like it could be like the world's greatest pimple being popped.
Exactly. There's a little bit of pain, but afterwards, like oh.
No, I get the squeamishness around needles. I'm not trying to get a flu shot. I'm not here for that.
No, I mean, the flu only kills people every year. You don't need a flu shot. Confession, I've never had a flu shot, but I always feel like I should get a flu shot. All right, here's your tweet of the day. It's from our own Chris Towers. I just don't understand this. I don't get it. Maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. But from Chris, gotta be honest, I'm kind of enjoying the freak out over the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah.
And 21 people like this? 21
yeah.
people should be kicked off Twitter. Don't encourage Chris.
Don't like any of my tweets.
Like some of them, but not this one. Why are you enjoying people freaking out over our soccer team not qualifying for the World Cup?
Well, because first of all, our soccer team just won a World Cup. Let's give some credit to the actual good U.S. soccer team.
We love the women's team.
Every year
I
and
love
nobody
the women's
cares.
Team. They get kicked
all
out
of
Epcot.
All of a sudden, we got one dude, this pusillic guy, and all of a sudden everybody's talking about him like he's the best player in the world.
That's not his name, Chris.
Look, I root for the U.S. men's national team during the World Cup, but I'm not going to act like I'm heartbroken because some team that I watch every 4 years isn't going to play in those 4 years. Like,
but you don't
it's kind of funny.
You don't have to enjoy. It's not funny. You don't have to enjoy other people being upset about it.
It's kind of funny.
Oh, God.
Because this is like this the guy? One time where Americans get to act like we're underdogs.
We are underdogs.
And we really relish it. And like sometimes the underdogs lose, guys.
I don't think it has anything to do with the Little Giants, too?
They get stomped by 60 points.
Wait, there's not really a Little Giants, too, is there?
There probably should have been.
Not if you're writing
it. I want to know
it.
What
My
happened
God.
To the icebox.
Who would see that movie? They get stomped by 60 points. It's terrible. A junior's dating a cheerleader and not icebox. I don't know, man. It has nothing to do with underdogs. Just that's our country. That's our team. We root for them. I wanted them to go to the World Cup. I watch all the international games. Not every single one, but pretty much.
Yeah, I watch a bunch of it. It's I just think it's funny.
Aww.
I'm a jerk.
I guess. I don't know what the other explanation there could be. But all right, we're learning more. Who liked that tweet? What's
21
with you
people? I got that. Adam, I got that dopamine rush every time I get a like, so just keep them coming, people.
That can't spell dopamine without dope. Well, you can. I guess you can.
You got to mix letters up.
Yeah. All right, let's recap the Red Sox. One player who will be better next season, Chris Towers. Better.
It's actually really easy, and I'm just going to kind of trample over this whole discussion. It's really easy to find players who are going to be better for the Red Sox next season than they were this year, because I kind of think everyone, like, except for Chris Sale and Craig Kimbrell, I look at this team and, like, nobody really had a great season for this team.
Nobody.
Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong. Devers in short amount of time.
Yeah, he was pretty good, but I think he mostly just lived up to expectations. You know, he played 58 games. He had 10 homers, 34 runs, 30 RBI.
And it's kind of, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with John Farrell being fired. Like I had been saying, I remember they were underachieving and I thought he was going to be the first midseason guy to get fired. And then Heath said, no, actually they're just going to win the division. So I guess we're both right. But he's won, I think, 93 games 2 years in a row. And yeah, a lot of those guys underachieved this year. Now, Betts was actually really good in fantasy because his plate discipline was amazing. He stole a lot of bases. He was the number five outfielder in points, number 10 in Roto.
Yeah, and I just think he's a really easy call. I thought he was a really easy call to be kind of a bust this season because I thought he had, you know, you look at pretty much everything he did in 2016 and like, he had one of those best case scenario seasons that you see every once in a while where just like every indicator, you know, the BABIP was a little bit higher than you would expect. The home run to fly ball ratio was a little bit higher. The lineup around him, so the counting stats were great. Everything moved in the right direction all at once for him. And I just think you kind of had the opposite in 2017. Like
except it's really only the batting average. The home runs went down from 31 to 24, but the steals were the same, 26 steals. The runs and the RBIs both came down, but he scored 102. Scored 101 runs and had 102 RBIs. So if Mookie Betts, I don't know why he hit 264. His plate discipline improved. He had as many walks as strikeouts. He had a low BABIP.
268 BABIP. That's it.
Yeah. So there's no reasonable, it's perfectly reasonable to expect Betts to hit around 300. If he hits around 300 with 25 homers, 25 steals, 100 runs, 100 RBIs, I don't know that he would have been a bust. I think he's a top five player if he does that.
Right, but maybe not bust. He was an easy bet to not be as good in 2017 as he was in 2016. I think he's an easy bet to be better in 2018 than he was in 2017.
Yeah, I'll take him over Charlie Blackmon next year.
I don't know, just because Blackmon gets to play in Coors, that's such a big advantage.
Maybe
I will. He's been 1,000 OPS guy for like the last year and a half.
I said that for shock value. I'm not sure. I think they're really close, though. They're very close. And Betts is giving you, the last 2 years, he's giving you a lot, you know, about 10 more steals. So
that's big.
Yeah, it's something. All right, so that's a player who's going to get better. A player who's going to get worse. Do you want me to take this one?
I really struggled with this because, like I said, I look up and down the lineup and even, you know, Craig Kimbrell, I guess, is probably someone who's going to be worse in 2018 than they were in 2017. But I don't really think that is actionable. He's still an elite closer. Right? If he has a 2.1 ERA instead of a 1.7 ERA, who cares?
Yeah.
Maybe Chris Sale, just because he's a pitcher and pitchers are just unpredictable. But that guy's about as predictable as starting pitchers get. You know you're going to get what you're going to get from him. Nobody else really had, like, nobody played above their heads on this team.
Pomeranz.
He had a 3.32 ERA in 2016 and a 3.32 ERA in 2017.
But look at his whip, man. He had a 1.35 whip, I think. Yeah, 1.35 whip with a 3.32 ERA. Maybe that was just unlucky. Now Pomeranz, like every year, it seems like he's really good at stranding runners. But yeah. I also felt this was a difficult question. Who's going to be worse on the Red Sox? And technically, yeah, like I think Sale will be worse because Sale had an ERA over 3 in both 2015 and 16.
That sounds about right. Yeah. But again, like Kimbrel,
like he'll be great either way. But
if Chris Sale has a 3.3 ERA instead of a 2.95 ERA, and he strikes out 280 batters instead of 310 or whatever it was, he's still going to be one of the five best pitchers in baseball. Like there's very little downside with Chris Sale. So even if he is worse, I don't think it matters.
Yeah, I think that Pomeranz would be my best answer here, unless you want to say like Doug Fister.
Yeah, I think Pomeranz is probably a pretty good bet.
All right, let's go on to Arizona then. One player who will be better on Arizona next year, Chris.
You know,
but hold on. Remember, the humidor could be coming next year.
It could be. So why don't we go with a guy that doesn't really rely on power, who actually, you know, there's a chance that AJ Pollock could benefit from the loss of the humidor because this is a guy who, you know, the 20 homer pop in 2015, the 14 homers this year, that's nice. He can be a, you know, if he's just a 15 homer guy next year, but he benefits from that gigantic outfield in the way that someone like, you know, DJ LeMahieu has in Colorado, and you see it kind of boosting the batting average on balls in play. I think that's something that we might see in Arizona next year is maybe the home runs come down. But because outfielders have to chase so many more balls, that outfield is so big, you know, that could lead to a player like AJ Pollock who has more gap-to-gap power benefiting. And I just think, you know, AJ Pollock was disappointing, but still pretty good. And if he gets that BABIP up to the 320, 330 range like it's been in the past, I think you're looking at another guy who's probably going to be a 300 hitter with good pop, good speed, and good run in RBI production if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, I like AJ Pollock. I thought he got sort of a bad rap this year. He went into a slump in the second half, and people were really mad at AJ Pollock, but I thought he had a nice year, and they're a lot better when he's playing well. I went with Ketel Marte as a player who will be better. I like the walk-to-strikeout ratio. He had 29 walks, 37 strikeouts in 73 games. He didn't really do much, you know? But I feel like he could be a doubles guy or something like that. Maybe a points league guy for Marte.
The steals are surprising. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't this guy steal more bases?
Yeah, I mean, did he steal in the minors this year? He did, and he only stole 7 bases this year in the minors. But he has.
But in the past,
he's
been a 25 to 30 steal guy.
Yeah, I don't know. There are skills there for Ketel Marte that I think he could be a little bit of a shortstop sleeper, specifically in points leagues. Who's going to get worse on the Diamondbacks next year?
He's probably not going to be on the Diamondbacks next year, but JD Martinez is the obvious call. He had one of the best power seasons in the history of baseball. He's not going to do that again. I don't know if we need to spend all that much time on it because, not to sound like a broken record, but just like Chris Sale and Craig Kimbrel, if JD Martinez is a little bit worse next season, he's still really good. We're talking about a player that since his 2014 breakout, I think he's 5th or 6th in the majors in OPS. Like, underrated elite hitter.
Yeah, he's so good. He's so good. So JD Martinez might be a little worse, but he's still going to be great. I went with Greinke. Greinke was number 5 in points, number 8 in Roto. I just don't imagine anybody's going to have him ranked in the top 8. But he's got some durability. I mean, we could say that for him.
Yeah.
And that's something. He'll be 34 next year. It's another season with 200 innings. It just feels like, because Greinke doesn't have great velocity, feels like someone who could go backwards kind of quickly. But then again, you know, he's dealt with...
He's already bounced back.
He has, yeah. And I was wrong. Like, I didn't really think he'd ever get back to this. But I don't know, man. I just... I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it with Greinke. I take him top 15. I wouldn't take him top 10 next
year. I think he's like a safe low-end number one. Like, you don't have maybe the gigantic upside that... You know, even someone like Robbie Ray, I think, has more upside than Zach Greinke.
But oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Zach Greinke's so safe at a position where safety is non-existent.
Safety first.
If you want to take a number one starting pitcher that you just you're probably not going to have to worry about. Zach Greinke's a pretty good bat.
And one player who will be exactly the same, this is a bonus category for me, because I was going to use Jake Lamb as someone who will be worse, but I think he'll be mostly the same, except this is really an interesting study for Jake Lamb on for fantasy baseball on stats that we can't really control. Because just take a look at the batting average, home runs, and RBIs the last two seasons for Jake Lamb. 248 this year, 249 last year. 30 home runs this year, 29 home runs last year. So he hit the same exact average in home runs, almost identical. But this year, Jake Lamb scored 8 more runs and had 14 more RBIs. He also drew 23 more walks. But when you just talk about counting stats and you've got 22 more runs plus RBIs, that's why he was 5th in points leagues this year and was like 13th last year or 14th last year. He was 7th in Roto this year, and Lamb was 15th last year. So, I mean, like, the runs and RBIs.
Team around him.
What'd you say?
That's the team around him. Paul Goldschmidt had a better year.
Yep, yep. So, right, and J.D. Martinez obviously helped when he came over.
Yep.
But I think, you know, I was going to say Lamb would be worse, but you just look at the end-of-season numbers, and he hit 250. And I knew he would – everybody knew he would regress. Like, he can't hit lefties.
Yeah.
The two things that look good for Lamb – is that this particular year, 2017, his home road splits were nearly identical in terms of power. So, you know, maybe the humidor won't affect him. And number two, so bad against lefties. Like, he hits like 170 or something like that against lefties. But they did face the eighth most left. They had the eighth most at bats against lefties in baseball. So that's a weird stat that you can't really predict. I mean,
I guess, like, the Dodgers have a lot of lefties, but you probably... It's like the Jake Arrieta made 10 starts at home, 20 on the road kind of thing, where it might just be how the schedule lined up.
Yeah, right. So maybe he sees the eighth fewest amount of lefties next year.
Yeah.
Who knows? But Lamb with another solid year, and I don't know. Actually, I don't know the rankings off the top of my head. Do they have Lamb as a top 10 third baseman next year?
I don't think so. Let me check that real quick.
All right, while you do that, I'm very excited about SeatGeek. I'm very excited about SeatGeek because I have been looking for tickets to a Hurricanes football game for next month, and I found some good ones on SeatGeek, and I compared them to another website, and they are about $25 cheaper, nearly identical, same section, about two rows difference, about $25 cheaper on SeatGeek. This is the whole point of SeatGeek. They find more tickets. They get more results for you, and they bring in the cheapest results. It's a one-stop shop. You don't have to look at multiple websites. SeatGeek does it for you. Go to a game, a concert, go to comedy, go to theater, whatever you want. Make it happen on SeatGeek. Every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence, and if you want to save some money, use the promo code FANTASY, and you get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Again, at checkout, you type in fantasy, you get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I've used SeatGeek for a lot of Yankees games, for football, for a concert. I use SeatGeek all the time. And I tell everybody about SeatGeek too, and they're all very thankful. So use that promo code fantasy, $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. You ready, sir?
Yeah. Jake Lamb is 12th and he's third base rated.
Thank you. All right, so last week we looked at top five at certain positions. I think we did first, second, and third. Let's do the rest. Top five shortstops in Roto leagues. Elvis Andrews was number one. I told you Elvis Andrews would be number one. He hit 297 with a career high. He hit career high in home runs, RBIs, runs, and strikeouts. Andrews won. Lindor, two. Jonathan Scope was three. He played 5 games at shortstop, gained eligibility. But we won't count him. Manny Machado, 4. No, Manny Machado, 3. No Scope. Trey Turner, 4 in Roto. And Chris Taylor, 5. Whew, what's your reaction, Chris?
I think this is who Elvis Andrus is now.
20 homer guy?
I think that part is about the change in the baseball, I think. But yeah, I think he's a 300 batting average, 25 steals, maybe not 20 homers, but probably 15 homers, given the park he plays in. And you know what's amazing? He's got 5 years left on his deal.
Well, you know what else is amazing is he's been around so long that he feels old, but he's only 29, Elvis Andrews. He's in his prime.
I think he's just kind of peaking right now. You know, when you look at the batted ball profile, he's hitting fly balls more frequently over the last 3 years, you know, up to not a fly ball guy, but he's up to 30 to 32% where he's with 20% before. Hard hit rate up to 28 to 30%. You put it all together, you know, the seams are a little lower on the baseball, so it travels a little further. And yeah, I think he can be a 15 homer guy. You know, last season and this season, very similar in terms of batting average, in terms of, you know, stolen bases. And then you just add that little extra boost of power on. And I think he's, you know, not the number one shortstop. I would probably lean towards, you know, Scott has him number five, I think.
Yeah. In Roto, Scott has Andrews fifth and Heath has him ninth.
Yeah, I would probably lean more towards where Scott has him than where Heath does.
I would take Andrews over Segura. Why not?
Yeah.
And Heath has Segura over Andrews. But I would take Bregman over Andrews, which Heath has, but Scott doesn't.
It depends on the format, I think. If if he needs stolen bases.
Scott does. They're back to back for Scott. Andrews 5, Bregman 6. Yeah, I would probably just change that and go Bregman over Andrews and put Andrews 6.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. And number 5 is Chris Taylor. I don't think he's going to be making the top 10 or top 12.
Does not rank on either Scott or Heath's lists at any position. I think he's eligible at, what, 3 positions?
I don't know what he will be next year. Let's take a look.
Second base and outfield. That's it, actually. Okay. He only got 14 appearances at shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's easy to throw away second or like late season numbers, but maybe all the good luck just finally caught up to Chris Taylor. In September, he batted .214 with 3 home runs in a bad month.
That would certainly be my my guess. Yeah, I mean, the underlying skill set has just never really pointed to him being the kind of hitter that he was for a long stretch last year.
That was shortstops in Roto. How about top 5 outfielders in points leagues? Charlie Blackmon 1, Stanton 2, Aaron Judge 3, Jose Ramirez, who led baseball with 56 doubles at 4, and then Mookie Betts 5. So your top 5 outfielders in points leagues are Blackmon, Stanton, Aaron Judge, Jose Ramirez, and Mookie Betts.
And Blackmon, you know, you said you would take, who was it over him?
Betts.
Mookie Betts. Okay.
But then I kind of backtracked.
Thing with Charlie Blackmon is I the home road splits are obviously insane, but he's going to keep playing a course. And something clicked in the second half of the 2016 season. He went from being a mid-800s OPS guy to hitting .338 with 1,000 OPS in the second half of 2016. And then he carried that over and was just consistent pretty much all year. He had a couple of, like, the down months for Charlie Blackmon now are what his peak used to be. You know, his down months are at a high 800s OPS. I'm buying into Charlie Blackmon as, like, someone we need to consider in the top half of drafts.
I'm not sure how much Aaron Judge I'm going to have. Because, like, look at what he's doing right now against the Indians. I know he's faced good pitching, but he's 1-for-15 with 12 strikeouts. Like, come on, dude. It doesn't take much, it seems, to get him off kilter, probably because he's so tall. And, like, tall people are tricky in baseball because mechanics are so important. And it often takes a while for tall players, especially pitchers, to figure it out. And Judge hit 52 home runs, okay?
Like, he was awesome.
Yeah, but the .284, like, he feels like a .260 at best hitter to me. I don't know. I know he hits the crap out of the ball. That's going to help. But, he's frustrated.
I remember in the first half of the season, there was a lot of talk of, like, well, Aaron Judge is going to be a, you know, .370 BABIP guy. And he ended up hitting with a .357 BABIP. And He's a tale of two seasons guy. The first half of the season, you know, he was striking out a lot, but not alarmingly so. You know, we talked a lot early on about how he had really gotten the strikeouts down to a manageable rate, you know, 28% rather than 35%. And then in the second half, the strikeout rate was in that, you know, 35% range for, you know, long stretches. He actually got it down to 32%. If that's where it ends up, that's pretty good. But I think he's probably, like you said, more of a 260 batter.
I'll take 260 with 50 homers. He's not a first round pick, so for me anyway. Probably. Definitely not in points. Maybe in Roto. Although, I mean, he does walk so much, so that helps too.
What would be the argument for taking him over Stanton?
Health. But that's the other thing. Like, he was dealing with a shoulder injury, so you could look at that as a good thing, actually, that he dealt with a shoulder injury for much of the second half, and that could have contributed to the slumping. Yeah, I would just say health, but they are pretty similar. I think the best format for Aaron Judge is a categories league that has on-base percentage.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like
he's a first-round pick there for sure.
Yeah, I buy into that. All right, let's go to starting pitchers. Top five starting pitchers, kind of a boring list. Top five starting pitchers in Roto leagues this year were Kluber, Sale, Scherzer, Kershaw, and Strasburg. Kluber, Sale, Scherzer, Kershaw, and Strasburg. Now, Kershaw had a pretty terrible year for Kershaw. I mean, 2.31 ERA,
ugh.
0.95 whip. Actually, both highest in 5 years for Kershaw. And if he's actually, like, if that's going to be Kershaw from now on, like, still amazing, but only, like, normal amazing, then he probably shouldn't be the first pitcher taken because he's got, like, chronic back issues.
Yeah, I think you have to be really concerned about the chronic back issues. And part of the reason why he was a top five starting pitcher this season, even though he only threw 175 innings, is he won 18 games. That's not going to be predictable, even on a great team, because, you know, in 2015, he threw 232 innings and won 16 games. That stuff just fluctuates. So I think you throw that out. But look, he's absolutely one of the first three or four pitchers off the board. It's not like, you know, all these guys, with the exception of Chris Sale, are starting to get into their 30s if they're not there already. I know Scherzer and Kluber already are. Kershaw will be 30 next season, so there's also the chance that, you know, they all slip just a little bit. Yeah, I'm probably not taking any of them in the first round, but that kind of goes without saying when it comes to me. What about you, Adam?
Who, Scherzer or Kershaw?
Any of them.
Yeah, I'll take one of them. I'll take either of those guys in the first round.
Yeah.
I might even take Kluber. You know, well, we'll see. Like those guys just feel safer to me than Aaron Judge.
You know, I'm old enough to remember when one Adam Azer said that Corey Kluber was not an ace.
Well, I'm not. I don't remember that at all. I'm old enough to remember when Chris Towers burned the American flag after the U.S. men's national team lost.
That is libel. Or slander.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a blaspheme.
Yeah, no, I was clearly wrong about Kluber. He's incredible. I heard something interesting about Severino on the broadcast. Who the heck was it? Tom Berducci was saying that Severino lost weight after 2016 and got more flexibility, which helped with the life on his pitches. And I heard that, and I'm like, how is a fantasy analyst supposed to be able to forecast something like that? There's a lot that goes into it, you know?
And that's the thing with pitching, and this is why, you know, a big part of why I don't like investing is it's so hard to predict, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Some small off-season change turns this guy with obvious talent, but not much track record, into one of the best pitchers in baseball. And I really do think Luis Severino is a guy who, you know, if he's a top three, top two starting pitcher next season, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Top five relievers in points leagues, not counting SPARPs, so just closers. Kenley Jansen, Craig Kimbrell, Alex Colome. I was going to do the Colome, but I won't. Alex Colome, Corey Knebel, and Roberto Osuna. It's all about saves. I mean, in points leagues, it's all about saves. What else can you say?
I mean, you know, Wade Davis was incredible this season and didn't end up as a top five closer because he didn't have the save opportunities that we were hoping for.
That close either. But Ozuna was fifth. He was 100. He was nearly 100 points worse than Kimbrel at number two.
Because so, you look at Kimbrel had the incredible performance and a bunch of saves. Yeah. Roberto Ozuna was pretty good. You know, had
10
some
saves.
39 saves. He had 50 save chance, 49 save opportunities. Yeah. I still think you don't look at saves when you're drafting these guys. You look at the guys who are in the role, just rank them who you think is the best, and hope the guy that you took gets the most save opportunities.
Except the Cubs don't 2 years in a row.
But the Cubs weren't nearly as good.
But look at Cody Allen.
What we thought.
It's the weirdest thing. Like Cody Allen is the weirdest thing. He gets like low 30s saves every year. Like what's his name? Alex Colome had 47 saves this year. Cody Allen's a better pitcher.
The reason we thought, and I think in 2016, I think it was, the Blue Jays had like two save opportunities in the month of April. Like that stuff just, it's so unpredictable. The reason we thought the Cubs might not get as many save chances is because last year they blew everyone out. This year they didn't.
I know. But, okay, Cody Allen is the weirdest one, though. Cody Allen has never had more than 34 saves. And just the last 3 years, I don't know if he was the closer the entire year for 2014. I don't remember all the circumstances, scenarios. But he's been a great pitcher for 4 years in a row.
Yeah.
And he never gets that many saves. It's the weirdest thing.
All right, so here's probably why. In his 69 appearances, he pitched in the 7th or 8th inning 16 times. I would guess that's just not true for Roberto Ozuna. I would guess Roberto Ozuna didn't pitch in the 7th or 8th inning all that often last season.
Yeah, probably not.
And so Cody Allen's one that, because we know Terry Francona, Roberto Ozuna pitched 4 times in the 8th inning in 66 appearances. Because we know Terry Francona does use his relievers, I would say in a more optimal way, but certainly in a different way than most managers do, he's probably going to get fewer save opportunities than you would expect given how good he is and how good his team is.
Let's read a few emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. This is from Ryan. He wants 3 keepers from this group. He's already keeping Trout, Altuve, and Correa. So no
That's
pitchers.
Pretty good.
That's very good. 3 keepers from Daniel Murphy, Gary Sanchez, Jacob DeGrom, Jose Ramirez, Reese Hoskins, JD Martinez, Cueto, Carrasco, Greinke, Tanaka, Justin Upton, K-Riss Davis. All right, let's eliminate some people. Reese Hoskins, eliminate.
Yep.
I think JD Martinez, eliminate. Cueto, eliminate. Tanaka, eliminate, and Justin Upton and Chris Davis, I think you have to eliminate. Which gives us Daniel Murphy, Gary Sanchez, DeGrom, Jose Ramirez, Carrasco, and Greinke.
I'm going to go a little off script and take DeGrom. I just think you have so much offense already. Go get a pitcher.
I agree.
Gary Sanchez, I think, is an obvious call because he's the top catcher. And then I'm torn between Daniel Murphy, Jose Ramirez, and Carlos Carrasco.
I'm not.
Okay.
Carrasco.
Yeah, I guess it's just a...
I want that second pitcher.
Yeah, do you want that second pitcher? Can you get a Chris Sale, you know, coming into the draft
true.
Because you're already so top-heavy? Do you just throw all your draft resources at Chris Sale if it's an auction? That might be the option. But you might reach a point of diminishing returns on offense once you have Trout, Altuve, Correa, and Gary Sanchez. You've filled up 3 of the toughest positions to fill.
This is from Isaac. It's time for start limits. He's not in favor of 2 start pitchers. He wants start limits.
I mean, it all depends on what kind of league you want to play in. If you're in a hyper-competitive league where you want to know, and I know this is what Scott White lives for, is he wants to know that the best fantasy baseball player won 100%. The person who's willing to put in the most time, the person who does the most research. And I think that is perfectly fine. And if that's the case, you should not have start limits, because the ability to spend that time, that's all part of winning. But if you're just looking for, you know, everybody to be on relatively equal playing field. Like fantasy, if you're looking for a fantasy football type experience, it would kind of suck if one person was able to start three quarterbacks and the other person only had one, just by luck, you know, by fluke. So it depends what your experience, what experience you want with your game.
I mean, if you play in a categories league, like a weekly categories league head to head, you absolutely have to have innings limits. I don't know if it needs to be starts limits, but you need to have an innings minimum and an innings maximum. If there are daily transactions, otherwise, yeah, then it's just like the guy who has the girl who has the most time is making transactions all the time and beating.
That's why I don't like daily transactions and daily lineup leagues, because it just, you're giving too much of an advantage to the guy who's willing to be the most anal retentive.
But the one I'm in isn't like that. Like the one I'm in is really well run. It's,
yeah, but if you have limits, but you know, you have to have those limits.
You do, yeah. And if you're in a weekly head-to-head points league, like, I got no problem with people streaming two-star pitchers, because a lot of times they drop good pitchers.
Weekly, yeah.
Yeah, weekly.
Again, daily, especially in head-to-head points leagues, there's almost no downside to throwing out any crappy pitcher there.
Right. No, you can't. Yeah, agreed there. All right, Leah in Canada said, I won my league, and I was the only girl to make it into the playoffs. Thanks for all your help. I will be listening in the offseason. Happy to send you a box of donuts or something else weird and hip that everyone is eating these days, if you give me your office address. Chris?
We will definitely give the office address.
Okay, I'm going to put that in your hands since I don't work in the same office as Chris.
Man, I'll do it.
Okay,
try to remember.
Is it going
to
be donuts?
I'm really notoriously bad at remembering anything.
Chris is the cool one, so he would know what the kids are eating these days. Donuts, good or not?
Are cronuts still a thing?
I don't even know what those are, but I heard that word like the other day.
It's a donut made with croissant dough, which is a different kind of dough. It requires like folding cold butter into your, I don't know.
Boy, that is interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, come on. It's a New York thing. You should be able to find them.
Yeah. And also, Leah says, also ate one of my kids' mini raisin boxes last night. Raisins are underrated. I stand by that. Yup.
Because she offered to give us donuts, I won't comment on raisins.
And finally, Chris Richards in Plover, Wisconsin. That sounds like a very cold place to be.
Yeah.
Plover, Wisconsin. I have a lot of good keepers. We can protect three players, but I have five guys I really like. So pick three. Gary Sanchez, Cody Bellinger, Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, Freddie Freeman. Sanchez, Bellinger, Stanton, Judge, and Freeman.
Assuming they all cost the same, I think Sanchez, Stanton, and Freeman are the answer.
You're keeping Sanchez over Aaron Judge?
I think so.
You're drafting Sanchez over Aaron Judge then?
I don't know.
Yeah, and I was thinking the same thing, but then I was like, "Well, that means I would rather have Sanchez than Judge next year." I might. He's a catcher.
Yeah, I mean, and he's really, really good as a catcher. I mean, this might be someone who, if he stays healthy, hits 40 homers next season.
Yeah.
And it might be as simple as I want Sanchez on my team more than Judge, but in a draft next March, I might feel like I can wait 12 picks and get Sanchez versus Judge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. It sure does. Okay, Chris Towers, way to go. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Go USA. Women's soccer. We're all about it now. They're all we've got.
The World Cup we care about is in 2019.
And basketball is about to start. And
sorry for your Knicks.
Sorry for my Knicks. Absolutely. Okay, thank you all for listening. And we'll talk to you next Wednesday. Take it easy, everybody.